Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network. My name is Lee Hutchison, and I'm joined by returning guest Marina Sirtis, best known to many as Counselor Deanna Troi on Star Trek. I was joined in 2019 by Marina at the time to promote her upcoming play, Dark Sublime. Marina joins me to look back on her experience taking to the stage in London's West End, her return to Star Trek in Picard and Lower Decks, and how life has changed for her professionally and personally over the past 2 years. Thanks so much to Marina for joining me, and hope you too will enjoy the show. Good to chat with you today, because the last time I spoke to you was in 18, and likewise, I'm also a Spurs fan, and we were just about to go into the sort of Champions League semi-final at the time. You were just about to go into the
I know, wasn't that a year? I actually went to the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and watched the Champions League on the big screens.
Oh, that must have been a tragic experience.
It was, because it would have been nice if I would have liked to have heard 60,000 people cheer, but yeah. That wasn't to be.
It was also at the same time you were also about to take to the stage in Dark Sublime.
Kind of That's
looking,
right.
Looking back on that experience, how was it? What was it like going in and then coming out? Did your expectations, fears, worries all kind of come together, or what was that experience like?
I was a bit nervous, I have to go, because I hadn't been on stage in 20 years. I mean, doing conventions doesn't count. It really doesn't. So I started learning my lines in January, I think I did. I mean, I started reading the play every day, and then, you know, it kind of, by osmosis, went in. So when I got down to actually learning the lines, they were semi there anyway. But I wasn't as nervous as I thought I would be. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those actors who gets really nervous before she goes on stage. I do, obviously, on press night, because you'd be a block of ice if you didn't, you know. But on press night, I do get nervous, because what they say is going to affect, you know, ticket sales. And when your name's above the title, it never really bothered me that much before, because my name was never above the title. But when your name's above the title, suddenly all that stuff is important, you know. So I was nervous on press night. But then after that, I love doing theatre so much. I can't wait to get on stage. And it was such a good role. You know, I mean, when I read it, I thought, well, he wrote this for me. But he didn't. He didn't know me. He didn't have me in mind. I don't know if he really knew my work. I'm not sure. You know, I mean, you know, obviously, he obviously did some research once I was cast. But my cast members, I mean, was so brilliant. That I was just so excited to be on stage every night. It was lovely. And then, of course, you know, having that whole thing of, you know, lots of people at the stage door afterwards, and they've come because they're Star Trek fans, and some of them have never been to the theatre before, which is kind of fantastic, that because they're fans of mine, they came to London from other places and came to the theatre and loved it so much that hopefully they would come back to the theatre. And we've, you know, brought some new people in. It was a wonderful experience. It was really, really sublime. There you go.
I remember sort of seeing it in London, and there you are just off sort of Trafalgar Square, you're face above the doors. You've obviously been in things where like you're part of a cast and an ensemble on film and TV. What was it like being the main star, the person where it's like your name's above that, people are coming to see you? And as you mentioned, there's the pressure of like, if this doesn't get well reviewed, it's going to reflect on Muggins.
I thought about it, but it didn't frighten me. That's the thing. I think I wasn't scared of it. And in fact, you know, I have been working for 40 years to get my name above the title. Mm-hmm. And finally it happened. And so I was so excited, so thrilled, felt so honored that, you know, that happened. And was so proud to be attached to the project that I was, you know, like they say, over the moon in football circles.
We've obviously seen just yesterday there's going to be a further delay to theatres opening up. You know, people are doing so many great innovative things outdoors, live musical theatres and parks. What can we kind of do just now? Because it's going to be a long road back for theatre, for stage, for performers like yourself. What can we do to support kind of the industry just now, Marina?
Well, basically, everyone's got favorite actors, right? Everyone's got favorite actors, and they're not all, you know, A-list, B-list, whatever. You know, they could be, you know, someone that you just admired their work for a long time. I would say research what they're doing, you know, and if they're doing something, even if it's online, whatever it is, support them, because actors are starving, and you know, that's what we can do for the actors. Now what we can do for the technicians and the people behind the scenes is a whole other thing. I mean, how do you support those people? You know, I mean, it's all right for Boris to say go and retrain for something. You're not gonna, you know, this has been your life's work. You're not gonna jack it because of a pandemic, you know. Plus retrain, and then when the pandemic leaves, what? You know, he should think before he speaks sometimes. It worries me. But all I can say is if you have a theatre that you love or an actor that you love, find out what they're doing. They may be doing something online on Zoom that you can contribute to. There's National Theatre Live that you can go to online. There are ways to support. I mean, it's not the same as actually being in the space and, you know, clapping your hands and smelling the person's BO behind you. You know, it's not the same thing at all. But we've just got to keep going. It, you know, the light's at the end of the tunnel now, Lee. So we've just, now we have to be, you know, really be good about all the precautions that we can take to get this thing done and dusted and get on with our lives.
What's it been like for you as an actor these past 15 months, kind of adapting to this kind of new normal for actors? We've seen it where so many actors are now creating like little studios in their like cupboards or bed sits, you know, moving towards like voice work a lot more. What has it been like for yourself to navigate this new part of a career potentially for you?
Well, my case was a little different because I lost my husband just before the pandemic. So I wasn't going to work anyway because I was mourning, you know, and then the pandemic hit. So I wasn't, you know, I was on my own, you know, and I was in LA, you see. So I wasn't even in the UK. I was in LA and basically alone for a year. I mean, literally, I had three girlfriends, English girlfriends, who would come and visit me, you know, make sure I was okay. We'd sit in the back garden. But apart from that, I was alone for a year with my dogs. And it was hard. It was really hard. But the dogs saved my life. Absolutely. If I hadn't had them, you know, I don't know what I would have done. But you just, you know, you just go a day, you just go at a day at a time, Lee, and you just get through it, you know. It was a really hard time, you know. So, anyway, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. That's what I'm going to say to that.
It was interesting timing. You appeared on Star Trek Picard just as sort of that show kind of climax, just as lockdown was kind of beginning for the first time. And it's one of those episodes, I think, where for a lot of fans and reviews, it seemed to have really struck an emotional chord for people that have been going through a lot of challenges in the past year, similar to yourself, people that felt alone, people that have gone through heartache. What was your feelings like when you saw that kind of script and making that kind of return to a franchise that you'd probably thought you'd left behind?
I was thrilled at the reception it got, I have to be honest. I mean, I got more kudos for that episode than 7 years and four movies before. I was like, blimey, was I really that rubbish? That was just cracky. Anyway, but it was lovely. It was lovely. Jonathan was a sweetheart. I mean, we were talking before and he was saying, well, you're going to be fine because you've just come off stage. So you're at your peak and I haven't acted in 20 years or whatever it is. And I'm really nervous. But, you know, once we got on that set, it's like riding a bike. It really is. Once I could see her in the mirror, she came back. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I said to my girlfriend recently, I was like, I've gone really cockney again, haven't I? And she went, mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm not trying to, you know, this is the real me. And I'm not going to, you know, I do accents, whether it's Rodine or, you know, Alabama or, you know, or German, whatever. I do accents. That's what I do. So I can be me the rest of the time. It was very gratifying, I have to say. It was very gratifying. It was the most popular episode of the season. It got the most, you know, viewers. They lost their minds a little bit when they saw Troy and Riker again. And, of course, Lulu, our daughter, was so brilliant. Although, how two brunettes have a blonde child, I've still to work out. Because I did human biology, and I don't think that's possible. But anyway, it's the 24th century, or as well as all kinds of things can happen. But it was lovely. It was lovely. And then on the last day of filming, it was a Friday, LeVar and Michael Dorn came to visit. Mm-hmm. And it got really loud, really fast. And just the rest of the cast and the crew were just kind of gobsmacked. They were going, is that what it was like on your set? Because we could hear you like 300 yards away. And like, yeah, that's exactly what it was like. It was very loud and very raucous, and we got in trouble a lot. And the days were much longer than they needed to be because we were mucking about so much. But yes, that would, and it was just perfect. It was perfect. So all in all, ticked all the boxes. Yeah.
You touched on it, like such positive feedback for your performance in the episode. Is that something that's kind of changed over the kind of span of your career? Like thinking back to almost like the 80s and 90s, feedback would be slow and filtered. It would be in the press. Now someone could go, right, you were the greatest thing in this episode.
I know, it's right there on Twitter. I'm weaning, I have to be honest, and my fans have noticed this, I know. I'm kind of weaning myself off of social media. It's become so hateful. Mm-hmm. You know, I posted something recently. I don't think it was political. I think I was just, you know, making a comment about something, and it was accepted by most people. But then there's always someone who has to be snide. Mm-hmm. There's always someone who has to go to the negative. And I'm getting really bored with it. I have to be honest, I'm really getting sick of it. I've never done Facebook because, you know, they are the devil. And I wish people would realize that Facebook has destroyed society as we know it. Mark Zuckerberg, don't even get me started, has no social conscience at all. I mean, they'll you know, delete a pair of boobs, but leave all that hate speech on. You know, I don't understand. I really don't understand. And I do, because it's all about money. It's all about money. And there's not enough money in the world for these people, because they won't do anything to change their format. So I've never done Facebook. Won't do WhatsApp. I don't do Instagram. Don't do Instagram because it's owned by Facebook. And that's why people, I'm not on Instagram. But even Twitter now, I'm not, First of all, I'm not angry all the time because I'm not living in America anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the reason I was on Twitter was because I was just furious all the time in America. I lived in this constant state of fury. I'm not angry anymore in England. I might be a bit pissed off, but not like angry, you know, but at certain things. But the social media thing, I don't know how long I'm going to be on it. I have to be honest. I'm not sure how long I'm going to stay on it. I mean, I did do the boycott for the football, you know, like the footballers did for that week. I just think it's, I'm so outspoken and I'm so, you know, someone said to me recently, they asked me if they could cancel something because they had some, and I'm like, no, that's absolutely fine. Are you sure? I'm like, am I the most honest person that you know? And they're like, yeah. And I said, okay, I tell it like it is. I really do. There's no gray area with me. It's black or white. So I just, I don't know. I'm just getting sick of the negativity that we're allowing into our lives. And I don't want to be in that environment.
Yeah. There's obviously was a lot of positivity, obviously, about your appearance again, and you returned in Star Trek Lower Decks as well. Like, you've got a long kind of history in voice work. What was it like to turn a physical character into a kind of audio character and to bring her voice into a very different...
Well, I have to be honest, voice work isn't my favourite thing to do. I like to look into someone's eyes when I'm talking to them, you know, and I don't think I'm that good at it either, because if I was, I'd do much more. You know, let's be honest. If I was good at doing voice work, I would, you know, I'd be doing much more voice work. I know my limitations. I kind of lucked out with Gargoyles when I got cast as Demona. That was like, you know, that was great. That put me on a certain plane, if you like. It's actually quite hard for me to just sit in a studio with headphones on and make up reactions if I can't see the, you know, I'm not acting with someone. Mm-hmm. There, I have friends who are really good at it. It's like when we did our voices on Family Guy, you know, again, on your own or with one other person maybe in the studio, it doesn't really do it for me. You know, it is what it is. And I'm not, you know, it's lovely that they want to see Deanna Troi, so that's great.
Do you think she'll be back in sort of season two? Obviously, these things tend to be tight-lipped, but would you kind of expect to be coming back for that?
I know for a fact I'm not in season two.
Okay, interesting. So kind of with the kind of, what was it like working with, like, say, Mike McMahon, like, kind of going, like, how did he kind of see your character? Because we saw last year both kind of sides of your character, with that very empathetic side and sort of like Picard, and then that side that we all kind of love as well, with that kind of fun, boisterous kind of one of the gang in sort of Lower Decks. How did he sort of see your character compared to, say, in Picard, with your the direction you got there?
When you've played a character for 30 years, it's a very brave director who's going to give you direction.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because you know your cat. I mean, they may have an idea. I mean, they'll give you get direction, like walk up the stairs on this line, or could you stand, you know, closer to Jonathan, or, you know, whatever it is. I'm trying to think. No director's going to come into Star Trek and tell the actors how he sees their character. Yeah. It's not going to happen. I'd rip his throat out anyway, as Marina. Like, what the hell? I know my character better than you, just shut up. You know, that would be the reaction.
There's one thing I'm curious if you're able to touch on it, where, like, there was a lot of debate and discussion about when you were in, like, Star Trek Picard. One thing that was quite noticeable, like, immediately to myself and others when you were watching the credits, was they didn't put you down as sort of a special guest appearance, but Jonathan Frakes was. And there was a lot of debate and discussion about this.
It's the lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
The lawyers read the contract. And my agent didn't, and you have to request that billing.
Okay.
You negotiate your billing when you're negotiating your contract. And we just forgot.
Mm-hmm.
We forgot to negotiate the billing. So they didn't, you know, when the lawyers called the people who do the graphics, they said, yeah, this is who's in, you know, and they give them what's, you know, and basically that was our bad. Yeah. If I had read the contract, like you're supposed to read, you know, supposed to read the contract, then I would have noticed it and I would have, it would have been changed.
So kind of now that you're back in London, what's your kind of plans for the future as the industry is still kind of adapting and coming back together? What's kind of your hopes and plans for the next year or so?
Well, I don't have any plans really. Not, you know, work-wise, no plans because we don't know what's going to happen. I'm getting involved with a film festival in Kingston that's going to happen next year. I'm going to be one of the ambassadors for that particular festival. You know, I'm in a position now, having moved back to England, because, I mean, as expensive as London is, it's nowhere near as expensive as Los Angeles. And so finally, I'm in a position now where I can really choose what I want to do. Yeah. I can really... I know you don't earn as much in England, but you know, I can really, I don't have to do the rubbish because I need to pay the rent kind of thing, you know? So I'll just wait and see what comes across my desk. I would love to do some more theatre. Absolutely. Just, and you know what, if that's what I did for the rest of my career, that would be fine. Mm-hmm. It would be absolutely fine.
What kind of theatre is it that you would like to do kind of next and so on?
I've got a bucket list. I've got a bucket list of parts that I want to play. I do have a bucket list. Top of the bucket list is Medea.
Okay.
I'm going to, might have to, you know, let's see. Yeah. Helen McCrory, God rest her.
Yeah.
Was quintessential Medea when she did it. I mean, she was just out of this world. I'm going to let her fade in people's memories a bit longer before I take a bite of it, because I can't imagine bettering her at all. You know, if I'm in England, you know, if they ask me, you know, I've done Holby City, I've done Casualty, I've done The Bill. The Bill's not on anymore. But you know, there's those shows that every actor shows up in. I haven't done Doctors.
With the Cockney accents coming back so thick now, EastEnders is clearly the next.
I know everyone says that. Behind the bar, says, do you know what? I would. If I had a firstborn, I might give them up to be in EastEnders. I really might. I really do love EastEnders, always have. I was so upset when they took it off PBS in America. Mm-hmm. But anyway, now that we, you know, even in America, I could watch it now with BritBox. So, no, I would love to be on EastEnders.
What have you seen that's changed in the industry and from your time that you've left to coming back? What's really surprised you now that you're kind of back about how the industry's changed or expanded or evolved for the better?
Well, TV in the UK is a woman's medium. Mm. Most of the producers are women. Most of the writers are women. At least 50% of the directors are women. And they write for women. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fantastic. I watched The Pact that was on recently. You'd never get a cast of women that look like that in America, mm-hmm. ever. In a million years, you know, it was so brilliant. And they're so, and what I'm gobsmacked now at actually a lot since I've been gone is it seems that British actors can do pretty much every accent in the UK, in Great Britain. I mean, really, you know, Martin Compson is a classic. You'd never know he was a Scot if you watched Line of Duty. That Cockney accent is perfect, that London accent. And I've noticed that wasn't the case when I left. I spent 3 years at Guildhall with a bone prop in my mouth because I had a Cockney accent to get rid of it and speak the Queen's English as it was supposed to be spoken. But that's not a thing anymore. Only newsreaders and only the older ones really and the Queen have the accent now. Everyone else has this like Estuary has evolved since I left. A whole new accent in 30 years, you know? That's been, to me, an eye-opener, especially, you know, going back to the time when I was at drama school and having an accent was, you know, they really tried to get rid of it.
kind of now that you're back, does it feel like a bookend to sort of that time in Hollywood? Like you went, you've lived the dream, you're still kind of living the dream. Does it feel like a moment of like that was, you know, a period of time that's now kind of over in a way?
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was all, that was half my life. I was half my life in Los Angeles. But I mean, it wasn't like half and then half. It was like quarter, half, quarter, you know, like that. So I, even though I became an American citizen, my heart was always in England. I mean, I think it's very common for, I'm first generation British. My parents were actually, although my dad was British because his parents were Cypriot, so he had a British passport, which was why he could come to England. My mum was, you know, my mum was Greek. My dad was Greek. They emigrated 3 months before I was born, and I was born here. I was always way more patriotic for England than any of my English friends, mm-hmm. which was kind of weird. But I think when you are the child of immigrants, you're just searching for an identity in the new country because it's so different to your parents' identity, you know. So my heart was always here.
That's the frustration you see with a lot of politicians where they often talk about, you know, people that have emigrated to your families where it's like they are an other, as opposed to some of them have come here. And you see, especially places like America, they're like, I always think of that TV show Rami, for example, where, you know, people that come there, they're so patriotic. They feel like they've been given a chance and an opportunity and they will give back to their country more than someone.
Exactly,
like
exactly, exactly. I mean, I remember when I went to be sworn in, you know, when you become a citizen and they give you a little flag to wave, I was really choked up. And people around me was sobbing, you know, because it's such a big thing. America was and still is for a lot of people. I mean, okay, compare it to, you know, a small village in Africa or the slums of India. It is, you know, the golden land. But it's, you know, when people go to America, they don't go to, and this is what they don't understand, they don't go to America to sponge off the government. They go to America to make a better life for their children, which means working their butts off. And they work their butts off. And they don't claim benefits because if they're undocumented, they can't. They're scared of being deported. So, I mean, people don't think it through. They really don't like join the dots, you know. They go, oh, they come in here and they take all our jobs and they go on welfare. Well, they don't. So anyway, there's my little rant. Yeah.
I'm curious. My final question would be, what was like the art, the films, the TV that got you through sort of the past year, 15 months, you know, what is it that you were enjoying and being inspired by and feeling like, oh, I want to be in that show, I want to work with that person, or this person's doing great work?
Well, I tell you what, I watched a show called Spiral.
Oh yeah.
It's a French, did you watch it? It's called Engrenage. It's Engrenage in French. It's Spiral in English. Well, probably the best thing I've seen in decades. Mm-hmm. The women's roles are so unique. I mean, there's one part in it that she's totally unsympathetic, and yet you're, you know, captivated by this performance. It was beyond brilliant. So that kind of got me watching a lot of foreign stuff. Mm-hmm. And I have to be honest, I did have my Scandi noir phase. Just got out of the Scandi noir phase. Now I'm catching up with British box sets. But I'd watched a lot of television. But then I always did. I always used to say, when I'm not on TV, I'm watching TV, mm-hmm. you know. So I love television, always have loved television. I was never one of those actors who was like, I'm only going to do movies, you know. I think we as TV, and I regard myself as a TV actress, we're in people's living rooms. We're part of the family, you know. I mean, people come up to me and they think they know me because I've been in their home with them all these years, you know. So I think we're quite privileged as actors, TV actors, to do that.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure to chat.
Well, lovely talking to you again, Lee.
I wish you
all
the
best. So what do you think is going to happen? Have we got a manager yet?
No. I think it's going to be my guy. After all the hype, I think it was going to be Pochettino, then Conte.
I started a hashtag. Pining for Poch.
And this is little podgy face.
Oh, do you know what? Oh my God. I mean, what? Flipping Mourinho. Jesus.
It was dreadful, wasn't it?
It was awful. We weren't watching Spurs. We were watching Chelsea, you know, get a goal and park the bus. But we couldn't even get the bloody goal. So, I don't know. Thank you, Lee. Have a wonderful rest of the day, my darling. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.